Vision Sunday. Vision is something that guides an organization that provides a kind of North Star for you. What are you aiming at? And much like a ship on a journey, which I've never been on, every now and then you need to reorient to the direction that you are intending to go. And that's why we do this twice a year, Vision Sunday, to just kind of make sure that we are orienting ourselves properly to the goal that God has put in front of us. So vision is, you can think about vision in a number of ways. It is, in the business world, a lot of times they call it your preferred future. It is your mission fully realized. It is the thing that gets you up in the morning that you feel like, man, if I'm a part of achieving this one day, I will feel a sense of accomplishment and purpose. I went and looked up some vision statements of various corporations this week, and first of all, my quibble is that many of these are mission statements, not vision statements, but that's a whole conversation for another day. But here's one: to create a better everyday life for the many people. That is not a grammatical error, or at least it is a grammatical error, but it's not on my part. It literally is this company. Does anybody have a guess of whose vision that is? McDonald's is a good guess. Anybody? Guys, it's a Kia's, of course. Here's one that you'll actually get. Making the best ice cream in the nicest possible way. McDonald's. Somebody guessed McDonald's again. That, of course, is Ben and Jerry's. There you go. Well done. This is a little bit more nuanced. Give this a thought. To help create a world where you belong anywhere. Think travel. United, interesting. What did he say? No, everybody's like, no, I don't. It is Airbnb, to help create a world where you can belong anywhere. Wow, big response. This is easily my favorite one. This is so great. Okay, part of why I'm showing you these is because one thing that you'll get is that some visions are very closely related to the organization itself, like the Ben and Jerry's one. You're kind of like, oh, yeah, that's kind of what they do. They make really good ice cream, and they're kind of nice about it. And then there's ones like this. Cultivating a better world. I really hope someone in here knows I want to hear like three guesses. Amazon. I heard Amazon. What'd you say? Yeah, McDonald's. Facebook. Interesting. Guys, cultivating a better world, you can look this up on their website. I double-checked this. Is the vision statement of Chipotle, which, in case any of you work at Chipotle, everything in me wants to make the joke like they should focus on cultivating better meat, but anyway, that's another story for another day. But our vision at Jacob's Well is this: it's breaking barriers to encounter Jesus together, and we want a vision statement more like Ben and Jerry's than like Chipotle's, right? We don't want this to just function in this, oh, those are nice flowery words, and you hear them every now and then at Jacob's Well. We want this to be our North Star. We want this to be what we're oriented toward. To get a little in the weeds here, this is what's called, there's different types of vision statements. Some of them are metrics-driven. You know, we want to sell this many cars by, you know, this year. Some of them are more competitive, like Ben and Jerry's. We want to make the best ice cream in the nicest possible way. This is what's called a reputational vision statement. This is what we want to be known as. We want to be known as a people where if you're around here long enough and we say breaking barriers to encounter Jesus together, you're like, oh yeah, that fits. That sounds like Jacob's Well. That's uniquely what they're about at that church. And so we want this to be something that matches how we think about our planning cycle, how we think about where we feel like God is leading us in any given year is by this sort of meta way that he's led us toward this vision statement, breaking barriers to encounter Jesus together. So just a brief word on where this comes from. You just heard it read, and I hope that even as Sarah was reading, you're kind of putting the pieces together. This is a beautiful story from John, one of the gospel writers. The gospels are these little biographies of Jesus written by some of his closest companions. John's a really cool one because as far as we can tell, John is very much Jesus' best earthly friend. Deep companionship between the two of them. And this is his reflection on the life of Jesus. And he tells this story. And he tells it in rather deep detail. The Gospels can kind of fire through stuff. John 4, it seems like, man, he really wants us to slow down and consider the dynamics that are going on in this interaction that Jesus has. And so I'm not going to go through the whole passage, but just wanted you to see some of the key things that made us pull this from this passage and make it our vision statement, this breaking barriers to encounter Jesus together. So he had to pass through Samaria. This is, strictly speaking, as many of you who have been around by now, I hope that there's details in the story that you could just spout back, right? This, strictly speaking, is not true. This is Jesus going from Jerusalem back up to his home, his home region of Galilee. And it says he had to pass through Samaria. Now, historians know this very deeply, is actually it was the case that when you were going from the south to the north at that time, you actually circumvented Samaria and you went around it, that the path was often around it. What this makes me think of is it's a little like saying he went from New Jersey to Connecticut and he had to pass through Manhattan. You're like, now look, if your GPS, right, like if your GPS is mistaken, it's going to take you 95 the entire way. This might be the most important thing you hear this morning, okay? It's going to want to take you 95 because it thinks there's no traffic on the George Washington Bridge. And then you get there and you're like, how could this have not computed on the GPS, right? You don't have to go through Manhattan. You go up Tappan Zee, or what is it now, Mario Cuomo Bridge, and then you go across Connecticut, okay? Write that down because you don't have to go through Manhattan. And the same thing was true here. Now, they avoided Samaria not because of traffic, not because of unbearable traffic like in Manhattan. They avoided it because of an extraordinary amount of barriers between the Jewish people and the Samaritans, the people of that region. In case we miss it, right, that very last line on your screen right now says, don't miss this. Jews have no dealings with Samaritans, so much so that they didn't even want to pass through. They didn't want to, you know, use their Wawas. They didn't want to stop at their gas stations. Like, they would go around it in order to avoid. Now, what were these barriers? These barriers were religious in nature. They had a huge disagreement historically about where the center of the Jewish religion was meant to be. One argued in Samaria. They actually get into this later on in this interaction, if you keep going. Whereas the Samaritans had a different location for where God was to be worshipped. There's history here. As far as we can tell, it's in Samaria that a lot of the people who, when Israel is taken off into captivity, come back into the region and end up living there. And just historically, they were seen as sellouts. Like, oh, you went and were part of the enemy's religion and you were part of the enemy's people and they're still your friends and you still do holidays with them. Like, you guys are total sellouts. Whereas the people down south in Jerusalem saw themselves as sort of the pure people. So there's all of this stuff. It's ethnic and it's historical and it's sociopolitical. And there's just a lot going on here, such that when we read he had to pass through Samaria, we're supposed to go, wait, no, he didn't. So what's going on here? And then when you read it within the wider story that John is telling, you realize that almost every time he uses this phrase, that Jesus had to do something, it's actually what scholars call a divine imperative. This is actually a God appointment. There is something that God wants from him that Jesus must do, and so he takes the unlikely route of not circumventing those barriers, but going directly into them. And within, you know, a very quick amount of time in the way the story is told, boom, we get our insight into, oh, this is why Jesus had to pass through Samaria. So he came to a town of Samaria called Sychar, near the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. This is a story in the Old Testament. Jacob's well was there, okay? That's where we get our name. There it is, right? I'm not Jacob. This is not my well. We still get that question sometimes, right? Like, this is a story from the Bible. I realized this summer, this is actually really cool. At our Well Kids Camp, which is like our VBS, this was one of the stories we got to tell the kids. And so I told him this story. And then I was like, and guess what the place was called? And I was like, it was Jacob's well. And they were all like, what? And I realized only like 20 minutes later, they think that it's here. Like, this story happened like right here. And I was like, do I clarify that? Or because the response was like so like, wait, what? And I was like, yeah, cool, right? Because that's where we get our name. And they were like, are you kidding me? It happened right here in North Brunswick? So anyway, didn't happen right here. We're just named after a place in the ancient Near East that was called Jacob's Well. So Jesus, weird as he was from his journey, was sitting beside the well. It was about the sixth hour. This is high noon. A woman from Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, give me a drink. For his disciples had gone into the city to buy food. They're thirsty. They're hungry. The Samaritan woman said to him, what are we doing? How is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman of Samaria? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. And I wish that I could go on and share this whole story with you. But to give you the spoiler alert, Jesus has this extraordinary interaction with her that forever changes her life, as far as we can tell. And in fact, it doesn't just change her life. The cool thing that happens is it changes an entire city's life. She goes into the city. This woman almost certainly is at a well at high noon when no one would have collected their water. You don't want lukewarm water that would have been heated by the sun all morning. There's a reason. There's some reason why she is socially outcast from this place. She runs back into that place with the message of this transforming encounter that she has with Jesus and says, you've got to experience what I've experienced. It literally says an entire town comes out to him, whatever that means, right? Like an entire town comes out to him. He stays there for days, and the town is forever characterized by its faithfulness to Jesus. It's wild. It's just a wild reality. Can you see how in reading this story, we picked up from it and said, what if we were a place where barriers to encounter with God were taken seriously, and instead of circumventing them and just doing business as usual, we actually went after them. We felt like we had to approach these barriers in order for Jesus to be encountered in life-giving ways, not just for our own sake, but for the cities and our neighbors and the communities around us. That's where breaking barriers to encounter Jesus comes from, which means for us, every year about February or March of the year, when we as leaders begin talking about where God might be leading us in the next season and in the next ministry year, which today officially launches, the question that we begin with are, well, what are the barriers that exist that are obvious to us right now in terms of within our own hearts, within us as a church community, and within the broader cultural moment? What are the barriers that are keeping people from encountering Jesus, and what would it look like for us to participate with God in breaking those barriers such that others might come to know the life-changing goodness of Jesus that we ourselves have experienced? And so that's kind of the question that we start from, if that's going to be our North Star. And this year, I mean, we look around, and some of those, right, the things that tend to keep us from Jesus personally, kind of unfortunately are consistently the same, right? It's our own distractedness, it's our own sin, it's our own shame, it's our own disconnectedness from each other, it's our own lack of time and space to engage with God. And so we're just going to keep going after that stuff. That's why we're a discipleship-heavy church, is we believe that there's always these barriers that we need to keep examining in order to encounter Jesus ever more deeply and in ever more life-changing ways. You know, I think of when he says to the woman in this encounter, and Sarah read it, this idea of there's water that she has been drinking in her own experience. In other words, there's things that she has pursued in order to fulfill the thirst of her soul that maybe satisfy for a moment, but she finds herself thirsty again, and so she just goes back and tries this and tries this and tries this. And Jesus says, but what I have is a kind of soul satisfaction that once you experience it, you realize, oh, this is sufficient for a lifetime. And man, to think of us digging deep enough wells within ourselves such that we might experience that soul-quenching water that Jesus has to offer. Like, that's something worth giving ourselves to again and again and again, and continuing to dig deeper and continuing to engage more of our personal barriers, more of the stuff that keeps me individually from God, even as I help you with that. And so we're going to keep doing that kind of work as a church. We also look around, and we are a growing church. That's just the reality. We went to two gatherings last year because we were already bursting at the seams, and we have seen significant growth. Now, we're not a church that's like That's why we exist, and we just want to grow to grow, but it's been encouraging growth. But with that growth comes the reality that sometimes it can be hard to connect in a community like this. And so that feels like a barrier right now. What are the sort of, for some reason, the image that we keep getting is like, if being here on a Sunday is some kind of highway that we're all on, what are the kind of, to use a good Jersey analogy, I guess that's where it comes from, what are the good exits? What are the good off-ramps to you actually experiencing community and friendship here? And so we're gonna do some of that work this year, right? And then there's this stuff in our communities that keep people from Jesus, one of which is just our own maybe lack of equipping, maybe it's just our lack of courage, and just sharing what we have experienced, right? The example of this woman is so compelling. She just runs back into the city that is clearly rejected in certain ways, and she's like, I don't have much to give you, but you know what I do have? I got a testimony. I have a story of what Jesus has done. And so we want to get more skilled at doing that and more courageous in doing that and telling each other stories of when we took that step to use a great sort of rubric that Tony Juhas and Rachel, who lead our evangelism stuff, have used in the past, to go from good conversations to God conversations to gospel conversations, which this week as I'm back in John 4, I'm like, that's there in this encounter, right? It starts as this very simple, hey, let's have a drink together, and then they're talking about God, and then he goes deep to her own stuff and says, hey, there's a need for you to make a decision about what I'm offering here. And then there's just stuff in our cultural moment that's hard and that's complex and that makes Christianity increasingly feel like it's got sharp edges to it. And so how do we understand those things? How do we wrestle with those things? How do we, our second core identity here is thoughtfully engaged. How do we thoughtfully engage those things? And so these are the kind of things that we talk about as leaders, is if those are the barriers, then what should we be doing in order to break those barriers and participate with God such that Jesus might be encountered in life-giving ways? One way that I've been thinking about this, even this week, Rachel and I were talking about this, is the reality that the gospel, that the good news of what Jesus has done, has this vertical element of reconnecting us with God and making God available to us. That's the ultimate gift of the gospel, is our relationship with God. So there's this vertical element. And I think that we're never going to arrive at a point where we have fully realized all that Jesus has on offer of himself if we would abide in him. And so we're going to keep trying to break those barriers and do these discipleship courses and the things that I'm about to talk about in order to see that go deeper in our lives, to encounter Jesus as a more regular part of our day in and day out as his people, because it just tends to be the case that we leave so much on the table in terms of these glaring promises that he makes to us about his availability to us and what it means to abide in him. So there's this vertical element. There's also this horizontal element to the gospel, and this really gets us going at Jacob's Well. We just sung about, right, from every tribe and tongue and nation, and you look around and there's a beautiful thing that God is doing in our midst, that this community increasingly reflects the beautiful diversity of Middlesex and Mercer counties and the surrounding areas, and there's such an opportunity for us to be not just a community who sits here together on Sunday, but to be an actual reconciled community, to show the world that it is possible to have deep, not just even friendship, but deep sort of family bonds across the things that normally have no dealings with each other in our cultural moment ourselves and in this time in history. And so that disconnection from God, that disconnection from each other, that's the thing that we're like, those are the barriers we want to go after. And that's the stuff that we are giving ourselves to. And so we're not adding a ton of stuff this year. We feel like some of that stuff has been kind of marked us for the last, I don't know, 5, 6, 10 years. And so there's not huge changes coming, but I do want to talk you through a couple of those changes. Before I do that, just one little bite from this passage. Jesus uses two analogies. He uses the analogy of thirst and he uses the analogy of hunger here. And I feel like this is a word for us in season. Jesus says to her at one part of the story, he doesn't say these two back to back, but in one part of the story, he says, everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. This makes me think of that sort of vertical element of reconciliation with God. That there is a kind of thirst that we all experience, right? In sort of an overwhelming way until we put our ultimate trust and faith in Jesus. But you feel this even when you put your faith in Jesus, right? We've spent the last couple weeks in lament, right? Like, there is this reality that we are ever drawing from Jesus. And I think that part of what Jesus is saying is that there's an encounter with him that requires us to slow down and reorient our lives around relationship with him such that we might experience that living water. And that's so much of what our discipleship is focused on. Can we slow down, be reflective on our lives, and create space for Jesus to speak into where we're at any given moment? Later in the encounter, his disciples come back. Remember, it's mentioned earlier in the passage that they were in town getting food. They come back, and they really want Jesus to eat. And Jesus says to them, like, oh, I'm good. And they're like, you're good? Like, we went into town to get food. So they say, has anyone brought him something to eat? And then Jesus says this wild line. Jesus said to them, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. It's like, oh, interesting. What do you mean? If there's a kind of provision that comes when we slow down and reflect and provide space for Jesus to speak into our lives, there's also a kind of provision that, dare I say, only comes as we go. That only comes as we actually set our hands to the mission of God in the world. That there's a kind of provision of God. There's a kind of, right, if the first is a soul thirst, the second is a soul kind of hunger, that actually, contrary to probably what most of us think, there is a kind of hunger that is only fulfilled as we actually expend ourselves in the world. And I would just say, if that sounds a little weird to you, for those of you who have been following Jesus for any amount of time, I would just appeal to your experience and say, is it not the case that there is often for us this barrier to service, this barrier to going and setting ourselves to the things of God in the midst of our own schedules that feels heavy, that feels exhausting, that feels like, oh, I don't want to do that. And then sometimes, by his grace, you push through that barrier and you actually go and you serve and you go and you give yourself to something. You exercise some courage in a conversation. And on the other side of it, you go, that was good. That was good. That was a good way to spend an afternoon. That was a good way to spend a conversation. And I think that Jesus is saying, yeah, that's what it's like. Is that, yeah, there's a time and place to slow down and reflect and create space for Jesus to speak and for the scriptures to form us in certain ways, but there's also a kind of provision that's not going to be there until you go and are sent to accomplish the work of God in the world. That feels like a word for us in season at Jacob's Well, right? Because breaking barriers to encounter Jesus together is going to require something of us individually in terms of saying, man, what are those barriers in my life to deeper encounter with Jesus? But then it's also a sending kind of vision that says, what are the barriers out there that are keeping others from encountering Jesus in life-changing ways, whether that's within our community or outside of these walls? And that's going to require something of us. And here's the beautiful promise. Jesus says, I'm going to meet you in both. And I'm going to give you what you need in both. And I'm going to fulfill you in both. And so, with all of that said, here is just a little bit about where we are headed this year. Here are what we call our strategic priorities. I included pictures this year. Our leaders, I walked through this a week and a half ago with them, and they love the pictures. And so the pictures stay. The first is opportunities for community. You will notice that on top of sort of the big things we do, and the big things we do are discipleship course and care groups. Discipleship course and care groups, you will hear ad nauseum about those over the next couple weeks, but discipleship course and care groups. Those are the big things we do. In addition to that, what you will notice this year is we're just going to provide more opportunities for us to be together. How you have experienced this in the past is normally these are church-wide things. We have a picnic coming up in a few Saturdays. We did that last year. That will be similar. We'll go back to a Somerset Patriots game. That'll be everybody together. And so we'll do some of that church-wide stuff, but we also want to provide some smaller places for you. And we're intentionally calling this opportunities for community. Because unfortunately, as Pastor Jalen, I've heard him say, like, we can't guarantee you friends. We can't give you friends. Unfortunately, we would love to provide that service. What we can provide is opportunities for you to take that next step of friendship and to say, hey, this has been great. We should grab coffee. We should get to know each other. This group of people, let's hang out. And so we're going to provide opportunities. So there'll be a couple of additional church-wide things. There'll be an additional men's event, a women's event. You'll hear about those. Those are even on, if you took the little paper when you came in here, those will be on that schedule. And then we're also hoping to just kind of foster some even smaller environments, you know, to come here on a Thursday night and do game night or watch Thursday night football or whatever it is. And so Morgan is overseeing a good bit of that with Brendan and Jenna Porter as well. And so, if you're interested in helping out with that, they're the ones who are kind of overseeing all of those things. The second one is related to the first one. The second strategic priority this year is continuing the work of normalizing evangelism. And we mean that in both senses. We mean making evangelism normal, not weird and strange. I think that that's a lot of the barrier that we feel toward evangelism. It's like, oh, that by definition is weird. Whereas it is normalized in the scriptures to go and tell others what we have experienced of God. Now, how that's been done, yeah, it can be very off-putting and strange. But we feel like to then say, well, I guess that means that we will never share this with others, is just not good enough for the people of God, right? Like, we've got to figure out ways to tell of the goodness of God to those that God has entrusted to us as friends. And so if you're here and you're not a Christian, I just want you to know we're going to work really hard to make this normal and not bizarre. If you are here and you are a follower of Jesus, like, we're going to keep pushing you and challenging you to say, how do we make this more a regular rhythm of life together? And so this might look like trainings that we've done in the past. This will look like spending a little bit of time on this in our Faithful the Core series, really talking, sharing stories about, man, what does this look like? It looks like, the reason why I put this little graphic up there is it looks like building on summer of parties and just normalizing. I think one of the main barriers to encountering Jesus is just the separateness often of our Christian friends and of our non-Christian friends, and ne'er shall the two meet, right? Like, and we do this thing where we feel like, ooh, I don't know how that would go. And part of the challenge is, man, just what would it look like to create a little bit of overlap there? Because that's a much easier sort of first step for people than maybe coming into a room like this as their first encounter. And so, it's stuff like that that we're going to keep trying to plug away at. You heard about our big things, discipleship. That we'll talk a lot about that over the next couple of weeks and call you to that. But just an overview of that, discipleship is, biblically, it's a word that Jesus loves to use, so we love to use it. It is the process by which we become more who God wants us to be. It is apprenticeship. It is instruction and teaching. These are the kinds of words that discipleship is like. So go to that next slide for me, Gwen. This is what discipleship looks like at Jacob's Well, is that you start in what we call our core curriculum that creates a sense of shared language, shared experience around discipleship. These are, we call them 101s. Don't get intimidated by all the academic language. We've just found it's a helpful way for us to organize it in our brains. But basically, you start there, and that gives you an intro to what do we even mean by any of this. We take you through a bunch of different areas of life that impact what it looks like or that are impacted by us following Jesus. And so emotional, relational, physical, that's what all of those are. Once you're done with that, you go into, we're going to continue to do discipleship courses in the fall. You go into more sort of discussion-based discipleship courses. And then in the spring, we launch our discipleship groups. How many of you were involved in a discipleship group in the spring? Cool, cool, cool. Those were wonderful. And we'll continue building into those in the spring. And so, again, I don't want to get too in the weeds here because we'll talk a lot about this the next 2 weeks. But basically, starting in a few weeks, starting the first Wednesday of October, I have that right? Right? The first Wednesday in October, we will all be here on Wednesday night doing these various courses. This is what it will look like for those of you who are just getting started with this or who haven't completed that sort of intro stuff yet. You will do Social Discipleship 101, Spiritual Discipleshipdiscipleship 101. Those are 4 weeks each, so those 8 weeks will be filled with that. If you're done with that, you'll have four options this fall for those various topics. And if you look at those topics, right, like this is where some of the vision stuff begins to land, right? Like we talk about stuff at Jacob's Well. It's like, right, finances and politics. Oh, interesting, right? Like those are barriers, right, often to that we just kind of want to circumvent and say, yeah, we're not going to talk about that. We'll just do business as usual. But it's like, no, like the gospel speaks into these things. Practices is, you know, relating to Jesus and how do you build a life that's characterized by creating space to reflect and to allow him to speak into it. And then we're doing one on parenting because that's increasingly, look around, a need here to be discipled in that. And then one on, you know, light topics like sexuality and gender and, you know. And so, yeah, like we talk about these things at Jacob's Well. And so these are on Wednesday, 7 to 8:30 p.m. This year, the little subtle change is instead of doing a 200 option on Sunday, we're going to offer the 101s on Sunday. So that's just something to think about if Wednesdays don't work for you and you're still in the intro stuff. We are going to offer something on Sunday and kind of see how that goes. Here's what we have coming up, fall events. Today, if you are a member, just a little reminder that that membership or members meeting is after the second gathering today. So, you know, go to your favorite bagel shop, get your favorite sandwich, and then come on back at 12:30 for members meeting. Gwen, you can go to the next slide. Next week, tonight is Well Teens launch, as you heard. And then next week is something very unique. It's Care Group Sunday. So that's the other big thing we do. Come back next week. You'll hear all about Care Group. You'll have an opportunity to join one of these things. These are wonderful. They've kind of grown and matured, and we feel like we have a good sense of the role that these play in the life of our church. They're very cool. How many of you are involved in a care group? Yeah. And so here's how we're going to do it next week. Obviously, we can't do one gathering. Look around. So we're going to do two gatherings on Care Group Sunday. It's the first time we're ever doing two on Care Group Sunday. And basically what it'll be is we will have shorter gatherings, and then we will do community meal after both gatherings. And so, you know, 9 to 9:30 or whatever, we'll do sort of a mini gathering, talk about care groups, give you an opportunity to connect to them. And then we'll do a community meal, you know, kick you out of here at some point so that the 11 a.m. can come in and then do the same thing in the 11 a.m., okay? So same deal next week. It's just going to look very different. We do need folks to help out with this. Mary Hefner, who puts on all the community meal stuff, obviously she's got to pull off two meals next week. So if you are willing to help, there is a sign-up sheet out on the little table right when you walk out these doors. If you could sign up. Her number's on there if you have questions and all that stuff, but just sign up and maybe put what gathering you could help with because she needs a lot more hands to try and pull off this pretty significant effort. Community Park Day in a couple Saturdays. Connections Brunch, if you're new or newest to Jacob's Well, that's your place to start. Connections Brunch is an opportunity to meet some of our leaders, learn a little bit more about our church, so you can put that on your calendar. There are your discipleship course dates, which are important. As you saw, the vast majority of our church discipleship course isn't like, oh, like 20% of our people do it. It's more like 80, 90% of our people. Like, this is what we do. And so that's a really important thing to make sure is on your calendar. Men's retreat dates are on there. The women's one-day event is on there. And then the care groups will start in October, and they go every other month. So October and December will be your care group gatherings. You should have grabbed a paper on your way in. If you didn't, they're out there also on that same table. Cool? Great. I know that's a lot of information. It's not what we normally do on a Sunday morning. Come on back the next few weeks. But we do feel like it's really important to give us a sense of kind of where we are and where we are headed. And so as we come to this table this morning, right, we come both in need of what Jesus uniquely provides. This table represents the body of Jesus broken for us, the blood of Jesus poured out, and we need that every step of our journey. And so we pause at this table, aware that we need that living water that he offers. And what I love about what Jesus left us is it's a meal. It's meant to be soul nourishment for us. And so take this from a place of need, but then have a sense that you are sent from this table. And you are sent from this table not to deplete yourself of the resources that Jesus has given you, but you are sent with the promise that he will meet you as you go. And so on the night before he was crucified, Jesus took bread at the table and he broke it. And he said, this is my body broken for you. Take this in memory of me. Then he took wine that was at the table and he said, this represents my blood poured out for the forgiveness of your sins. Then he says something so beautiful. He says, we will eat of this again. In other words, this is just a glimpse. This is just an appetizer of the fullness of what's coming when Jesus returns one day and makes true to the four corners of the earth what we get to only taste now. And so we come also in expectation and hope. How we do it is we come down these two aisles. There's bread on the outside. There's a gluten-free option here in the middle. You take the bread, you dip it in the wine or the juice. They are labeled. You go ahead and take it, and then we go out the sides. If you're not a follower of Jesus, we would invite you to put your faith in him this morning. It would be the best decision you could ever make in your life. If you were to do that, you are welcome at this table. We would really encourage you that if you make that choice this morning, that you let us know that so that we can give you a sense of what's next. But if you're not there yet, scriptures are very clear that you're just best off kind of considering what you've heard this morning and respecting that about the table. But the band will come up. They'll play for a little bit, and then you can come when you're ready. Let me pray for us.